Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we're talking bankruptcy, we're talking debtor's rights, and what this means for you. Your rights, and what these tools can do for you or perhaps do to you, and how this all works. My guest tonight offers a two-minute debtor's solution. Whether you're looking for help or adding to your knowledge base, you've come to the right place. You've come to the right place. You owe some money. Doesn't it seem like the entity you owe holds all the cards? Maybe not. What do you do when somebody else uses your credit? Do some collection agencies mislead you and claim a non-existent judgment? How long would it take to file a bankruptcy? And how and why are credit cards so hard to pay back? Tonight, we're here to talk about bankruptcy. We're here to talk about debtors' rights, and perhaps more importantly, to answer your questions. And as is becoming our practice when talking about bankruptcy and debtors' rights, call us for a two-minute on-air solution. As always, there's much to discuss. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that our attorney guest cannot always provide you precise legal advice in your case, sight unseen. But we're happy to pass along the legal principles to help you in your decision-making. And the legal guidance offered mightn't be the same positions as the employers or clients. Our guests are always here to help. And as always, you can call regarding any question. You want to talk about bankruptcy. You want to talk about the rights of debtors or creditors. You don't have to be right where we are in our conversation. And joining us again tonight is Leon D. Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Liotta. Leon is a certified bankruptcy law specialist, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, and a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. Mr. Bayer is co-author of the new bankruptcy, Will It Work for You?, published by Nolo Press. Mr. Bayer has been practicing bankruptcy since 1979. And I could go on, but without further ado, Leon, welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. And thank you very much for having me back.
Let's talk for a minute, just us. Tell me, what was the worst case you've ever seen as a bankruptcy lawyer?
Well, I see many worst case scenarios, but the kind that really tug at my heartstrings are people who have a case, it should have worked fine, but it didn't because their lawyer messed it up. Now, you don't see that all the time. It's rare, but it comes across my desk. And people who file bankruptcy are beside themselves with worry and fear. They're afraid of the court system. They're afraid of the laws. They're afraid of punishments that they think that they might deserve. The last thing they need is a lawyer who's incompetent and doesn't return their calls, won't speak to them, won't give them advice, and doesn't know what the lawyer is doing. And I had such a case come across very recently, and I took it over. And the thing that's just so sad about it is this person stands to lose some assets that could have been protected had the bankruptcy lawyer known what he or she was actually doing. A lot of lawyers will go into bankruptcy law practice because they think it's an easy way to make money. And it's not. It's a highly specialized vocation in the law. It requires a great deal of knowledge and training and experience to do it correctly. And you can't just sit there at a table with a client and know nothing about bankruptcy and just take your pen and start filling forms out. That's not the way to do it. And it's a methodology that is calculated to end up in a disaster, an avoidable disaster. So that's what really rankles me when I see something like that. It hurts the client. It prevents the client from having the relief that the law really wanted them to have. It gives lawyers a bad name, and everybody just gets a bad taste in their mouth out of it. So that's really the bad experience that I can relate.
You bring up an interesting point. There are only 11 areas in which the State Bar of California Board of Legal Specialization certifies specialists, and they tend to be areas that are not designed for somebody practicing elsewhere to walk in and pick it up from day one. They tend to be areas with a deceptively simple appearance when in actuality there's a lot you can do wrong. There's a lot you can do right. You can get a lot of relief, but you have to know the area pretty well. I would describe it as what a lawyer friend of mine describes as a trap for the wary.
Yeah, that's a good description, because bankruptcy law on its face looks like, oh, it's just a set of blank forms, and you fill in the forms, you fill in the blanks. But you have to know what the information is that you're being asked to supply. You've got to know what the variables are. Bankruptcy is a convergence of all kinds of other areas of law, such as real estate, family law. Sometimes even criminal law will enter into the picture, and the lawyer has to have a familiarity with how all these different things intersect and come together.
And omitting an asset likely means it's not protected. And similarly, omitting a creditor means none of this probably binds them.
Well, it gets more complicated than that. But really, the worst thing it can do is omitting assets or lying in your paperwork and not telling truthful things to the bankruptcy court. The court puts a great deal of importance on your personal credibility, and the court must believe that what you're telling the court system is accurate. And without a strong sense of believing in your personal credibility and the representations that you're making to the court about the facts of your case can lead to a denial of the bankruptcy. It can lead to criminal prosecutions. It's just a really serious matter. It's not the kind of thing to play games with. And you've got to get good advice before you get into a case.
For generations, we grew up thinking this guy can do anything. This is the best lawyer out there. He can take on this. He can take on that. She can do this. And the reality is, there's an awful lot of men and women practicing law in the hundreds of thousands, but very few are certified as specialists in a given area, learn more and more about less and less, and really get to know that area well. And in bankruptcy, it's especially important. You can find a certified specialist by looking at the calbar.ca.gov. That's calbar.ca.gov. And follow the links to find a certified specialist, and you will find somebody who has at least been tested and practiced enough that they should be able to hit that he or she should be able to help you.
Not only that, most bankruptcy lawyers will give a are going to give you a free consultation. We know you're broke. You're calling a bankruptcy lawyer. We know you're broke. Money is tight. You don't have money to throw away on the chance that maybe a lawyer could help you, maybe not. You want to spend money wisely. Well, most bankruptcy lawyers will talk to you for free. If a lawyer won't give you a free consultation, say goodbye, say thank you, and call somebody else. But get the advice that you need, and don't suffer without the knowledge of what you need to know to get through this. It's not necessary. You don't have to go through that.
So on a related note, why doesn't the law treat defaulting on a loan as stealing?
Sounds like maybe we had an angry listener who sent that one in. It's not stealing. Stealing requires an intent to deprive the true owner of property. And just because you've incurred a debt and you can't pay it back, it's not the equivalent of stealing. Most people who will find themselves in a debt problem are there because of the loss of a job, a serious illness that prevents them from going to work anymore, maybe a divorce, marital breakup, relationship breakup. And almost everybody would pay their debts back if they had the money to do it. And stuff happens, and it happens long after a debt has been established and made, long after the money was borrowed, long after the payment was due, and the borrower finds they're just strapped. They can't pay it back. That's not stealing. And every society, every organized society in the entire world has come up with rules and methods and customs to deal with financial insolvency. It's nothing new. There are records of bankruptcy cases that actually go back almost 3,000 years to the days of ancient Mesopotamia. And these records have been dug up in the sands of the deserts. Archaeologists have found them. They've decoded them. And this has been a part of human history and commercial transaction ever since human beings started trading goods and services to each other. I can make arrowheads better than you can, but you're a better hunter than me. I'll give you some arrowheads. You share some of the meat with me that you catch. That's trade. That's commerce. And out of every commercial situation, there are sometimes, unfortunately, situations where someone will incur an obligation to pay back or give something in the future, but then be unable to comply with the promise. It's not stealing. It's not theft. There has to be a way to deal with it. We can't just walk around clubbing each other over the head to get even over the failure to pay back a debt. It doesn't help society.
And of course, that presumes that everybody goes into the situation telling the truth, being thorough about what you say, because if you hold stuff back or you lie going in, some of that protection from criminal law might not be there.
Well, that's exactly right. And as I said a few moments ago, the law puts a great importance on your personal credibility. And if it is shown that you have been deceptive, hiding assets, failing to give the court accurate information, it could result in the denial of the bankruptcy, which means you don't get relieved of the debts. You went into court to get debt relief, to have those debts lifted off your shoulders. What good did you do yourself if you lie in court and then you don't get the relief that you're seeking? So it's pretty serious stuff. And some people expect a lawyer to tell them how to lie when they get to court. That's a horrible, horrible thing. It's a crime. It can result in the lawyer losing their license to practice law. It could result in the lawyer going to jail. It could result in you going to jail along with the lawyer. It's serious. But almost all bankruptcy cases will go through because most people are overwhelmingly honest. And most people just want to do the right thing. And the right thing is to be candid, give the court an honest explanation for the loss or disappearance of valuable assets, for the reasons why you're unable to pay back the debts, to give the court an accurate accounting of what your debts are, what your income is, what are your resources, your assets. And the court will weigh all these factors. And the law looks at all this stuff, weighs it out, says, okay, you know, the heart of the matter is you're an honest person. You did the best you could. And the bankruptcy law says in a situation like that, give this person a fresh start. Doesn't mean you're going to be handed a new envelope full of credit cards when the case is over. That's not going to happen. But your debts will be gone. And you can have a court decree to show the rest of the world your debts are gone. You've been freed of them. It's not the greatest credit reputation in the world, but it's better than still being in debt.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're talking about bankruptcy, debtor's rights, the debtor-creditor relationship. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call on, you make, You can call with any question on tonight's topic. You don't have to jump into the exact point we may be in our conversation. One of the questions that you hear from some of the more affluent folks might talk about things like a margin loan on stocks. And for our less, you know, less investing public, that's loans you make in order to purchase stocks. You might borrow money to pay for some of it. What happens when you can't pay it back? Can the lender collect their money back, or do they lose their invested amount just like you did?
It's a good question. What actually happens in a margin transaction is you're borrowing money, usually from a stockbroker, in order to buy an investment. It's kind of like borrowing money to buy an apartment building or to buy a house or a rental property. You're borrowing money to buy stock. The stock might go up in value and everybody's happy. It may go down in value. If it goes down in value, it can reach the point of dropping enough where the broker does what is known as calling in the margin. They give you a warning that you either are going to have to put fresh money into your account, into your stock account, and bring the collateral, the stock value, back up to enough money to cover what you've borrowed, or else they're going to liquidate it. And if they liquidate it and they lose money, you still owe the difference. It's the same as having a car repossessed. You get your car repossessed if you don't make your car payments. The bank sells the car. They auction it off. If the car doesn't get auctioned for enough money to pay off the full amount that you owe on the car loan, the bank can sue you for the remaining balance. The same is true with the stockbroker. If they can't sell the stocks for enough money to pay off what you borrowed to buy the stock, you're going to wind up in court getting sued.
And the one exception to that, where a deficiency doesn't necessarily come back to you, would be, of course, a real estate purchase.
Well, not always. Not always, Jeff. That's on a purchase money transaction. And in California is one of the states that allow a deficiency judgment on real property if it's not a purchase money loan. But the lender then has to make it, you know, it's complicated stuff. I don't even know if the listeners would even care about this, but you've asked the question, so I'll just delve into it for another second or two. And that is, I'm losing my train of thought here, but I think we have a caller.
We do. Let's take this call from Rich in Richmond. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
That happens to me all the time, brother, mid-sentence. Anyway, I have some outstanding credit card debt and student loan, and also I have $5,000 or $6,000 in the lovely tax debt from the IRS. Can I file for bankruptcy relief? And if I did, would a judge consider rolling the tax debt into that proceeding?
It's going to be set. The result there is going to be predetermined according to law. And you mentioned that you have some student loans. Student loans generally don't get discharged in bankruptcy. Believe it or not, it's actually easier to discharge income taxes you owe than it is to discharge student loans. Income tax debts are generally going to be discharged in bankruptcy if the tax became due and payable by you at least 3 years prior to the bankruptcy, that you've already filed an honest tax return at least 2 years prior to the filing of the bankruptcy. So if your taxes meet those criteria, there's a good chance that you'll get rid of it. A competent lawyer who practices in bankruptcy should be able to look at your tax records and be able to explain to you whether or not you meet the criteria now, or whether or not maybe it's a little too soon to file the case. Maybe you should wait a few more months. I have seen cases where people filed just a little bit too soon to be able to discharge income tax debts. And if they had been advised to wait and let another tax year roll over, they could have had the complete relief that they were seeking. So,
that's interesting.
Is there a fix for that?
Actually, no, there isn't a fix. If it turns out that you filed too soon and you'd have been better off by waiting a couple more months before filing your bankruptcy case, and you ask the court to dismiss the bankruptcy, judge, let me out. You know, I made a mistake. The lawyer made a mistake. If we just waited, I could have discharged all these taxes that I owe. The courts have ruled time and again, that's just not a valid reason to dismiss the bankruptcy and let you file again a little while later. So you're really screwed if that happens. You got to get good, correct advice before you get into this stuff.
And hopefully a lawyer with errors and omissions insurance, but that's another subject.
Thank you for taking the call.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us. So we talked about debts that are discharged in bankruptcy. Also, there are debts that are charged off. How long does a charged off debt stay on your credit reports and affect your credit score?
Yeah. A charge off debt is, first off, most consumers don't know what the term charge off means. A lot of people will think that the debt's been forgiven. It's been charged off. What does that mean? No, it hasn't been forgiven. Charge-off is just a bookkeeping term. It means that the creditor is no longer allowed to show it on their balance sheet as a current asset. So, for example, banks are required to have a certain amount of reserves and capital behind them to keep the bank solvent so it doesn't fail. And the charged-off debts are debts where a payment hasn't been made in a long enough period of time that it makes everyone suspicious that the debt maybe will never be collected and therefore shouldn't be counted as a current asset. A charge-off on your credit report is not a good thing. It does not mean the debt was forgiven. It means you still owe the money to somebody. In fact, the debt may have already been sold or transferred to another entity. There are debt buyers who buy these things up and go ahead and they proceed to try and collect the full amount. But the charge-off itself, the fact that you've defaulted and the term charge-off, it's going to stay on your credit record probably for a good 7 years.
Can you fix that by finding out who currently holds the debt and maybe paying it if you have the opportunity?
Sure you can. You know, they're not out to ruin your credit. They're not out to ruin your day. They just want the money. And people think, it's too late for me to do anything about it. I'm just screwed here. And you're not. They just want money. Pick up the phone and you call them and you make an offer. And if it's been a few years since you've made any payments on the debt, well, they have a strong reason maybe to work with you and give you a nice discount in exchange for you making a settlement with them. They just want to get some money. And the fact that they have had no success in some years of collecting any money from you might be very persuasive to get you a larger discount to settle the debt than if the debt was brand new. So sometimes it's good to let the debt get older and seasoned before you try to settle it. But don't wait too long. If you make a creditor go through a lot of hassle, you make them take you to court and you ignore all their communications and all, you're just not going to be their favorite camper. And when it comes time for you to want to try and settle, you may not get a very good deal or as good of a deal as you might have gotten if you had always shown a cooperative attitude. So you have to play this thing. You have to know what you're doing. And an experienced bankruptcy lawyer can guide you through this. A bankruptcy lawyer will probably be willing to represent you on debt settlements as readily as the filing of a bankruptcy case.
So what you're saying is that even without the extreme case of having to file a bankruptcy, you or somebody like you would be oftentimes willing to work with these debtors to work out payment plans or maybe negotiate a settlement of their debt.
Yeah, we're very willing to do that. There's actually very few appropriate cases for debt settlement because most people, when they walk into the bankruptcy lawyer's office, they just can't pay the debt anyway. And as much as they want to pay it, they want to settle with the creditor, they don't want to file bankruptcy, they can't afford to do anything but file bankruptcy. There's just no other, in almost all cases, there's just no other alternative. But there are some people, for example, where we've been very successful in gaining lucrative debt settlements for people that have just suddenly come into a lot of money. A significant inheritance, they had bad credit, but they just get a significant inheritance, and now they're in a position where they can make things right. And we can often get these things settled out, maybe at 50 cents on the dollar, sometimes 25% on the dollar. You know, it depends. It's you have to work the case and see what you can wind up with. But there are possibilities there in the right situation. But for most people with a debt problem, debt settlement just isn't going to make sense because the client doesn't have money to pay anything anyway.
So a listener calls in, has a Chapter 7. It's been discharged, and it's showing up on their credit report, asking if there's anything she can do to make a Chapter 7 bankruptcy drop off her credit score sooner than 10 years.
No, there isn't. If it is a true fact, then the credit report is going to show it for 10 years. And there may be people who advertise themselves as credit specialists and promising the moon to you that they can get it off your report and get you good credit and so forth. They're just lying to you. You're going to waste your money. Don't hire them. Don't pay them. If it's a true fact that you filed the bankruptcy, it's going to be on your report. It's going to stay there for 10 years. At Chapter 7.
A listener called in one last question before we break. You owe money. Your creditor's calling you. They're calling you at home. They're calling you at work. They're harassing you to pay up. At what point does the creditor cross the line?
The creditor crosses the line when they threaten you to do something that they have no legal right to do. The Fair Debt Credit Reporting Act and the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act define what debt collectors are allowed to do. And reputable debt collectors, and by the way, most debt collectors are reputable. And I say this as a guy who's been practicing bankruptcy law, been on the other side of the bill collectors for about 45 years now. They're almost all of them overwhelmingly reputable. They don't want to lose their license. They're all licensed by the state, and this is their business. It's their profession. They don't want to have that taken away by crossing the line and threatening to break your kneecaps, threatening to sue you on a debt that's already been barred by the statute of limitations. But the main thing is, you know, fall back on what the name of this radio program is. It's your legal rights. You can't get anywhere in solving this if you don't know what your legal rights are. So seek out some help, get some advice from a lawyer who knows about this stuff. Find out what your legal rights are, and you can talk to the debt collector, and you can either show them why they need to back off and go away and never come back, or maybe you'll get a thrilling, best deal of your life kind of a settlement that'll resolve everything and make everything hunky-dory again, or maybe you ought to just file bankruptcy and get it over with. But find out.
And one last follow-up. Can you tell your creditor not to call you at work?
Yes, you can. You can do that. And is that a smart thing to do? I don't think it's very smart. Here's why. If you won't communicate with them, if you won't give them the opportunity to discuss this with you, you're giving them no choice but to ratchet up the pain and maybe just go right into court. If you want to resolve this, you got to talk to them. If you don't want to resolve it and you're just going to go bankrupt, then go bankrupt. If you're going to just ignore them, well, maybe you're going to wind up getting served with a summons and complaint and taken to court sooner than you ever expected. So it's like going out in a boat. You got to know where you're going. You've got to be able to have a chart and read the water so you know where you're going and you're not going to get lost, because it's very easy to get lost in all these details and wind up with bigger trouble, which was completely avoidable if you had known what you were doing in the first instance.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
We talked a little bit about this before the show, but I did get an interesting message from a listener who just asked me, if we're aware of any, what bankruptcy protection laws are in danger of being taken away by either the Trump administration and or Republicans in Congress?
I'm not aware of any.
Now, the last time that the Republicans had Congress and the White House, they did come up with a bankruptcy reform that reined things in a little more, did they not?
No, they did not. That came through a Democratic administration. It was Bill Clinton's administration. And those harsher laws were enacted with the support, the enthusiastic support of Democrats such as Hillary Clinton. Does that burst your bubble?
The most troubling thing about that answer is it reminds me that I'm getting on in years, when things seem like they were 4 or 5 years ago, and then you find out how many years ago it truly was. That's a wake-up call.
Yes. Well, as I like to tell people, I was born in the middle of the last century.
We won't hone it in any further.
Okay.
A listener writes in that if she lent some money to a friend and has proof that she lent money to the friend, but the friend now refuses to pay, what are her options?
Okay. My guess is the friend just doesn't have the money to pay you, but let's assume maybe the friend does have money. It really depends on how much money is owed to you. Don't throw good money after bad money. We've all heard that saying a million times. Don't throw good after bad. And California has a fairly generous small claims court law that allows you to sue somebody for as much as $12,500. So if
and of course that's for an individual, right?
That's right. If it's a business, I believe a business is allowed to sue only for $6,250, one half of that amount. So it doesn't make sense to go, if somebody owes you $10,000 and won't pay up, it doesn't make sense to go hire a lawyer for $15,000 to sue your borrower for $10,000. It just makes no sense at all. So you have to be selective in the remedy that you choose for yourself. And if the amount of money is within the jurisdiction limits of the small claims court, small claims is a very good remedy to pursue. They even have advisors there that'll help you fill out the paperwork. And the court system in small claims doesn't allow lawyers to go in and practice in those courts. So you have to go in and represent yourself and tell your side of the story. If the other person shows up, they have to represent themselves and tell their side of the story, and the judge will make a decision. Sometimes it makes sense to give up some of the money that's owed to you in order to put your case into small claims court. For example, suppose the person owes you $20,000, but it's going to cost you $10,000 to hire a lawyer. Doesn't make sense to do that. You might sue in the small claims court for the maximum $12,500, and give up the other amount of money in order to keep this in the small claims court jurisdiction, so that you get a speedy trial and you don't have to hire a lawyer to do it.
So ultimately, you take the difference. In your example, it was $7,500, and compare that to the cost, not just the legal fees, but the overall cost of being in a court system, and go with the lesser number. I'll walk away from that because it's cheaper than paying the fees to get it the long way, and I get it a whole lot quicker.
And keep in mind, folks, it's not easy to collect money that's owed to you.
If you're spending money going after somebody that has no money, you might force the person into bankruptcy, but you're not going to get money where there doesn't exist any.
That's right. If it was easy to collect money, bill collectors would have an easy time of it. They don't have an easy time. And it is a struggle to get money out of people who don't have it. And as I said a little earlier in the show, most people would pay their debt if they had the money to do it.
So a caller writes in and says, and ladies and gentlemen, I invited people to call on the phone line, but you can always write to us. You can always drop us an email in advance at ylr@kalw.org.
Yeah, some people are kind of shy. They don't want their voice to be heard on the radio because they're afraid they're going to be recognized. But if you're too timid to actually call in person, you can send us the message and we'll do our best to try and answer the question.
You can also call in and talk to Joanne when she answers the phone, and she can relate the question to me without your going on the air. There's a lot of ways to get your message across, to seek out the help you want without having to be overheard and let your neighbors know you're having trouble paying. We're here to help. One person writes in and asks how to improve his credit score very quickly, easily, and perfectly.
Wow. That's a person who wants too much. Too much. Generally, in my experience, it takes kind of a long time to ruin your credit score. You have to consistently keep screwing up. And eventually your score will drop, and drop some more. In my experience, it takes a long time to fix your credit score. It's going to take you probably as long to fix it as it took you to screw it up. To fix your credit score, you've got to get out of debt. You're either going to settle the debt, or you're going to pay what you owe, or you're going to file a bankruptcy and discharge the debt legally in the bankruptcy court, with a bankruptcy law decree of discharge. But you're not going to improve your credit score overnight. That's not going to happen. You know, people today, they think that there's a quick fix, an easy hack for every problem. Well, there isn't. Credit scores are something that the credit industry relies upon. They need to know where to accept risk. Risk is the lifeblood of credit. So banks, lenders, credit card companies, they have to make decisions constantly, all day long, on who they will trust to loan some money to. And so they use that credit score as a way of determining who they should take a chance on. Should they take a chance on loaning you some money? Well, they might if you have a good credit score, because it means you keep your promises, you pay as agreed, and you don't give the lender trouble. Lender just wants to loan you money and get paid back when you promise to pay it back. They want it paid back on time, not years after it was due. They want a payment when payment was due. And there's just no quick fix to this. And if you're looking for a quick fix, it's just not going to happen.
Let me take a call from a regular listener. Peter, you're on the air. Peter's calling from all the way in Florida. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes. A little, I appreciated the, at the beginning you were talking about evidence going back to Mesopotamia about debt, and I love talking like history and philosophy and these kinds of things. It made me think, like a friend of mine, he talks about, because we're used to talking about supply and demand. That's where price comes, supply, demand. I had a friend said, no, it's supply, demand, and risk. And there has always been risk. As long as time is an element in what human beings are doing, there's always going to be the dimension of risk. And where there's risk, there's always the possibility of debt. And that's why it's like no surprise in Mesopotamia and anywhere you go, there's always the possibility of debt. Nothing to be ashamed about. It's just reality. And as far as great dramas, Heinrich Ibsen had this great play called A Doll's House. Again, if you've never seen it, you got to see it. And the element, you know, of being in debt. I mean, without the debt, there would be no drama. It's a great drama. And of course, just the most famous, or one of the most famous Shakespeare plays, Merchant of Venice. You must have seen Merchant of Venice, because the whole element there is like, can you demand, you know, if the person doesn't pay you back, can you really demand a pound of flesh? You know, so that might be something you talk about. Like if a person can't pay back, can you say, look, I can't cover the risk. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to demand a pound of flesh.
Well, the Merchant of Venice actually is drawn from the ancient laws of the Roman Republic, known as the Law of the 12 Tables. And one of the severe punishments that would be inflicted upon a debtor if they could not pay back money that they owed was banishment from the city of Rome. They had to be banished across the Tiber River, and they would never be allowed to come back to Rome. Another thing to do with your debtor, depending on the seriousness of the situation, was to have them incarcerated and brought to the forum on market days to see if a friend or a relative would be willing to redeem the debtor by coming forward and paying off the debt for them. And after a certain number of attempts to find someone who would redeem the debtor, if no success, then corporal punishment could be applied. And that's where the pound of flesh comes from.
Peter, I enjoy your call. I enjoy your literary reference, and I wish you a good night. And please say hello to Nora for me.
Who's Norm?
Nora.
Oh, Nora.
So I did have another caller that wrote in and wanted to know a little bit about Homestead. He asked if California state laws or individual county laws protect homeowners with a homestead declaration? And does that homestead declaration prevent losing a home even during bankruptcy or a judgment lien?
Yeah, the concept of a homestead is that when you file a bankruptcy, the law doesn't want you to lose everything that you have. So the concept is that you go into bankruptcy and you should be allowed to make a fresh start. It's not a head start, but it's a fresh start. And in order to make a fresh start, you need to keep certain things. We don't want you to become homeless. So the homestead exemption allows a person who files bankruptcy or has debt to keep the home where they live up to, if it has up to a certain amount of equity. And the equity is a difference between the current market value of the property and the balance that you may owe on any mortgage. The difference that you have there is the equity. And in most cases, a homestead exemption is going to cover the equity that most people are going to have today. You don't have to record a homestead declaration anymore. It used to be the law 50 years ago that you had to have a homestead declaration recorded at the county recorder's office for it to be valid. You don't have to do that anymore. Everybody has an automatic homestead to protect the property where you live. And the law establishes certain dollar amounts that will be your exempt property. So that's how that works.
So what are the consequences if someone's unable to pay his or her loan due to financial difficulties? Can they face imprisonment for not paying off their debt?
No. Modernly, that doesn't happen. Our friend in Florida probably knows about this, maybe knows more about it than I do. We used to have debtors' prisons. Debtors' prisons were very ubiquitous in Old England and the British Isles, and even in America. The last debtors' prison in the United States was closed. It was in Massachusetts, and it was closed in, I think, 1853. So you don't go to prison just because you can't afford to pay a debt. It's not a crime to be in debt, and that's one of the reasons why the bankruptcy laws are generous and intended to allow a person to have a fresh start to begin again, because you are more valuable to society than you are if you're just reduced to a pound of flesh and shared with a creditor. The whole idea is to keep you a productive member of society, working, paying taxes, contributing to society, taking care of your dependents and yourself so that you don't become a burden on the whole system. So that's the concept. So it's not a crime. It's not an event that will cause you to go to prison just because you couldn't pay a debt you owe.
Let me turn to David from San Francisco. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. Thank you very much for this incredible information. In my early years, when I was in my 20s, maybe early 30s, I filed a bankruptcy, and it took 7 years and took a long time to clear up my credit, but I got through it, and I won't do that again. However, recently I've started trying to consolidate my debts, and I've been calling the credit cards and trying to talk with them to help me reduce, lower the interest rate, lower the payment. And they keep referring me to companies like National Debt Consolidation and several others. And yet they charge me for the service, even though they're nonprofit, they charge me for the service on top of whatever payment I have to make. And then there'll be like a monthly fee service that I have to pay. Is this about right? Have you heard of that, or is that normal?
Well, yes, it's normal. I hear about it all mm-hmm. the time, and I would have nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm. So what's a better way that David could approach it?
Thanks.
David, you know,
yeah,
I don't know why you're being referred by your creditor to talk to a debt settlement company. It sounds kind of fishy. If you want to settle the debt, you call the company you owe the money to. You say, hi, mm-hmm. it's me. Let's make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a negotiation. And before you call them, you should know in advance what your plan is. How much money can you afford to offer?
And be prepared to ask for a supervisor. Sometimes you got to kick the call a little further up the chain.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, good. Good to know. Thank you. Appreciate your information.
Glad we could help. Thanks for joining us. Can you go bankrupt if you've never borrowed any money?
Oh, now that would be a rare, highly unusual situation, but I have handled cases like that. For example, there are many situations in which a debt could arise without an underlying commercial transaction. For example, you get in a car accident, it's your fault, and you're being sued for the damages that you've caused to the other person's car or personal injuries suffered by the other person, and it was your fault. Well, it's not a contract. It's an accident, but it's a claim for money, and such a claim is dischargeable in bankruptcy so long as it was not the result of drunk driving or voluntary intoxication. If it was drunk driving, then the law doesn't want you to be released.
Let me take this caller from Mikey in San Mateo. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. How are you doing?
Much better.
Good. So I have a question about what to do. And I have a house in another state. It's not worth very much money. I had lost my job here in the Bay Area. I'm essentially almost homeless now. I burned through my 401k. I have a stack of credit card debt. I have a stack of debt against my ex-landlord. And I'm just wondering, should I file bankruptcy, or is there a better, something better I can do?
I think if there was something better you could do, you'd know it.
Right. I don't know it. That's why I'm calling.
Okay. Well, you know, you say you have some property in another state. So the first question a lawyer is going to ask is, what is the value of the property? What is the property used for?
It's the house that I grew up in. I don't really want to get rid of it.
What's it worth?
Not very much, maybe $250K.
How much is owed on it?
I owe $150.
Okay. You've got too much equity there to be able to file bankruptcy and keep it. That is, if you file your bankruptcy in California.
Okay. Oh, so there's another state I might be able to do it in?
Well, if you go, if you move to the state where the property is located and you make that property your domicile, your residence, I'm sure there's a waiting period of a certain amount of time. So you've got to talk to a bankruptcy lawyer in the state where that property is located.
Okay.
Maybe talk to a couple lawyers in that state and find out what the residency requirement is in order to get the maximum homestead exemption, and find out what the homestead exemption is going to be in that state.
You mentioned it was the house you grew up in. Is the house now vested in your name, or do you share it with others?
No, it is. It is strictly in my name right now. I got it from my sisters, and even though there seems to be equity in the house, there's really not, because I'm still making payments to my sisters for the part that I bought from them. So there's really no equity in the house.
Ah, well, that's a very important fact. You may be able then to file a bankruptcy. A lawyer's going to want to see documentation, paperwork documentation on all of this, to be able to give you the advice on how to handle it, and hopefully preserve what you've got there.
Okay. So the majority of my debt is credit card debt. Is that, I don't know, is that worth filing bankruptcy over? Is there a different way to handle that situation?
Well, how much money do you owe?
Probably $100K.
It's a lot of money.
Well, I used to make a lot of money.
Okay. But, you know, you got to have a sit down with a bankruptcy lawyer. That's the first thing. And
yeah.
Then you'll learn, you know, what your rights are, what your options are. Seems like you're reluctant to file a bankruptcy case, which is fine. You don't have to. But it might be a sensible way to get out of the debt. And it sounds like you have no equity in the house where you grew up, because you owe your sisters for your share of the inheritance or something. I don't know quite how that worked out. But this is a jigsaw. This is a jigsaw puzzle, and there's some pieces missing, some important pieces.
Yes,
so you really need to sit down with the lawyer.
I owe about $20K to my old landlord. I moved out because I didn't want to keep on stacking up debt against him and make him, you know, go into debt because of me. I'm probably sure I could have stayed there as long as I could have, but I didn't want to do that to him, and I want to do the right thing. So with that being said, you know, for a landlord, that could be included in the bankruptcy, or is there some way to take care of him differently, or how does that work? Is there any government programs that help subsidize some of this stuff when you lose your job?
No, there isn't.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah, that's why I'm almost homeless. So, yeah. I don't know. And that credit card debt, the creditors, I don't know. I've heard things about you can handle a credit card debt a lot differently, and you may not have to go into your bankruptcy. I don't know what creditors, how that's handled.
Okay. It's not. You're either going to pay what you owe, you're going to file bankruptcy, or you're going to settle with them for some lesser amount. If you make a settlement, They're taking a haircut. It's no different than a bankruptcy. It's debt relief.
We're running low on time, and what I would strongly recommend is a two-step procedure. First is list everything. Everything you owe. Leave nothing out. You can always decide what to do with them later, but make a very thorough list of what you owe, and similarly, make a very thorough list of the assets you need to protect. Then meet with a bankruptcy lawyer and get some solid advice. You may want to make carve-outs. You may not be able to, but you need to talk to somebody like Leon Bayer who knows this stuff backwards and forwards.
Oh, absolutely. Well, great. Well, thank you much, gentlemen. I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to hearing more.
Those are good questions.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Leon, we have about a minute left. Is there anything that you want to bring up or chat about?
Yes. I want to remind the listeners that they can almost always get free legal advice from lawyers that handle bankruptcy cases. There's no reason to be uncertain about what your rights are. There's no reason to be uncertain as to what remedies could be best for you. And go see one or more lawyers and find out. It's not that big a deal. Most bankruptcy cases are actually going to be straightforward. There's, in most cases, there's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be worried about. And if you give the court an honest accounting of your assets, your income, your other financial affairs, you will generally get the relief you need. You get the fresh start. That's what it's all about. And if your credit's already wrecked, what are you worried about? If your credit's already wrecked, you got bad marks all over your credit score, your credit reports. You're not fooling anybody by saying, I'm too proud to file bankruptcy. Nobody in my family has ever filed bankruptcy. I guarantee you that they have, and you're not going to be the first one.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been talking about bankruptcy and debtors' rights, debtor-creditor relationship, and frankly, what remedies you have. Our guest tonight has been Leon Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Liotta. Leon is a certified bankruptcy law specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, and a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. We'll return next week where we resume our discussions with Bill Hing, professor, activist, and learn about the current state of immigration. Right here, where like every Wednesday at 6 o'clock, we take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Leon Bayer, and thank you all for joining us once again. And at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.